It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie joins Andy Yanaka. We'll talk about the screw job that one Swedish blog gave to all the Mac rumor blogs. We will round up the latest iPhone rumors. And we'll talk about Apple versus Samsung. The defense rests. And now it's time for Samsung to talk. Or is that the plaintiff? I can't remember. We'll talk about it next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 312, recorded August 14th, 2012. The Taming of the Screw. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD faces from Citrix. All you need is a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into a high-definition video conference. Meet with colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code MacBreak. And by FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing app for small businesses that saves time and gets you paid faster. Join over 3.5 million FreshBooks users and try the service free for 30 days of unlimited use at FreshBooks.com. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on MacBreak. And by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website or blog. Plus, more than 50 new features, including mobile responsive designs with automatic device scaling. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MACBREAK8. And by audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MACBREAK. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that tells you everything that's going on in the world of Cupertino, California, home to that little tiny company known as Apple Computer. Joining us, as always, Mr. Andy Yanaka from the Chicago Sun-Times. You're going to have to take some time off, Andy.
I really should. I mean, there's a lot of great staff there at the Sun-Times. They've got all bases covered. I could lay down my sword and shield for just 3 days to maybe get some fried clams, take a dip in the ocean, but I just feel too great a responsibility, Leo, and to you, the listeners, and to my readers, to provide them with the, well, no, not really, but... I'm a freelancer. They don't pay me unless I actually
Freelancers don't get a vacation. I forgot about that. you get paid when you work, period.
Yes, but I see that it also allows us to like create these wrong impressions with our friends and family that he is so devoted to his craft. He was working on Christmas, he was working on Thanksgiving, whereas it's like, I'm bored. It's 4 hours till Thanksgiving. I bet I can get some work done. That way I can take Saturday off and go get ice cream for 6 hours.
Oh, isn't that cute? And you've got a little bunny with you today.
Beep, 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 beep.
Also joining us, I'm very happy to have Renee Ritchie here from imore.com, which I've only recently learned used to be iVisor.com. And then
Visor Central.
And then I guess there's no I at the time. And then
Apple had not invented it.
And then after Visor, was it Handspring Doc Central?
Visor Central, Trio Central.
Trio.
Yeah.
Central. And then Crackberry.
Yeah. Now Android Central.
Android Central. And iMore.
Yes.
All iPhone all the time.
iPhone, iPad, anything Apple makes with an I in front of it.
Oh, okay. Good. I and more. I get it.
Yes.
Well, that's good. That gives you plenty. That's more than enough, so to speak.
They're a busy company.
Yeah, these Apple guys. Get busy. They also do, you guys do 100 podcasts. You got the Palmcast, the Crackberry Cast, the iMore Show, the Zen and Tech Show, Super Functional, Iterate, and even Windows Phone Central? Wow.
Yes.
Wow. That's a little slower over there. That's like a couple of guys.
No, they're actually killing it lately. I mean, they got the SDK leak and a bunch of other stuff.
You guys are really good at getting the rumors. In fact, that's why you're on, because you didn't get screwed.
I missed the screwing.
This is a very good story, and I'm actually kind of a little teensy-weensy bit relieved that the hoax was revealed before this show. You probably saw
headlines everywhere. Apple creates new screw to protect the keep you from getting into the iPhone. What happened, Renee?
You mean what, in hindsight or as it
well as it broke, and tell us how you avoided being fooled.
The story came out that Apple was making a strange, lopsided, asymmetrical screw head. I mean, Apple did transition from a regular screw to a pentalobe screw,
right,
to stop people from opening up iPhones and iPads.
And they've had a long history of this. They used Torx screws for a while, even though they're not uncommon, but still a little difficult.
And this was an asymmetrical screw, so of course no one would have one. And I'm guessing iFixit would have to forge some in the fires of Mordor so that the rest of us could...
So you might have seen these stories like here on the Cult of Mac. Not to name names, a lot of blogs got bit. And as I said, I might have been bit. Apple may be working on top secret asymmetric screw to lock you out of your devices forever.
Well, it's a cliche, right? Any company sufficiently large is indistinguishable from evil. We just figured they're out to get us.
The source, and to their credit, Cult of Mac points to the source, which is a picture on Reddit, unsourced, anonymous. A friend took a photo a while ago at that fruit company. They are obviously even creating their own screws. And this was it. This was the tip, the lead, the leak. This was all it took.
I assumed it was BlackBerry.
Fruit company. Yeah, BlackBerry's a fruit.
Yeah, absolutely.
So no. Why did you not get bit by this? Everybody else did, didn't they?
We're really cautious about posting rumors that we can't source ourselves. There is some value to posting things that you know are false or things that you think you can add context or value to. But if it's just a screw and it's unsourced and it doesn't make sense, I don't see a reason why Apple would do this. I understand they want to lock you out, but that's going to an extreme amount of trouble. And it's usually almost like security. Like you're only worth as much money as they will pay to do this to you. And it just didn't pass the sniff test to me. So we happily avoided it.
Kyle Weens at iFixit said, if this screw design is legitimate, the ramifications would be severe. But, and to Kyle's credit, he was skeptical as well.
Yeah.
He said, my gut feel is this isn't from Apple. The threads are unrealistic. He was the first to point out that, in fact, physics dictates that this screw is not going to work. I suspect that a head like that is too complex to use as a tool head. Existing tool designs tend to be simple because the head needs to withstand a fair amount of torque. If this is an Apple design, it looks like it would be expensive to manufacture. And in fact, it was a hoax perpetrated by a Swedish design company.
The Swedes, as usual.
As usual. I'm kind of a little mad at this company because this is, I don't know, this is a little bit day4.se, right?
And not only did they get the reporting, then afterwards they said it was a hoax, so everyone went back and gave them more. I don't like rewarding negative attention.
I agree.
Think that if people do create things just to get links, the last thing I want to do is give them links because it actually validates that business model. And not only did they get the links for a crazy story, but then everyone went and linked back to them again when they admitted to hoaxing, to it being a hoax.
It's very close to trolling, isn't it?
Yes.
And I agree, trolls, the worst thing you do with trolls is give them any attention at all. However, we are giving them attention, so maybe I should just shut up now.
Yeah. Well, on the other side, it feeds both sides of the problem in that a newspaper that thinks it gets a scoop and sells a million papers because it was hoaxed into doing a scoop, they've got no problem with that. All they were caring about was selling the million papers. As a matter of fact, they're grateful that that whoever hoaxed them pulled the mask off the hoax while it was still an active news story, because that way they got to sell another 750,000 papers the next day. So it points to the difficulty of being in the news business these days, because it really is critical to be among the first 20 minutes worth of coverage on a certain story so that you get that Google ranking, so that when people start to hear about this, that you get the link backs, you get the search hits. It's hard to the fact that I've deliberately chosen to be in a job where it's not so important for me to be the absolute first person to report someone. Mm-hmm. That means that it would be kind of wrong for me to fault somebody for wanting to be the first in on that action. And to their credit, most of the stories that were linked to at least were a little bit circumspect, and they were at least saying that, hey, here's a picture of a screw. We don't know where it comes from. Isn't it interesting, though? And I myself, when these rumors come up, if it's interesting enough for me to spend the first sentence saying, okay, who knows if this is true or not? It's probably not. But let's have a conversation about the topic of having security screws on a modern device. Is there any point to it? And at least you can have a nice discussion on that basis.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize this. I am not pointing fingers because I could have just as easily been breathlessly bit by this. The only reason we didn't is it happened on a Wednesday. I don't know.
So that's exactly how devious they were. They also chose to release information on the same schedule that Apple would as soon as we've done recording this show.
But the reason I bring it up, and it's not to give credit to this Swedish design blog either or give them any additional attention, but is to point out how overheated the rumor mill is, how difficult it is to know what's a true rumor or not, and to remind people that do not believe everything you read. And do trust people like Andy and Renee, who cover this day in, day out, and they have a sniff test. And if the problem is, I think that exactly as you say, Renee, there's such pressure to report instantly. There's no disincentive, really, to get it right. Because you get links either way. It drives traffic either way. It might be a little embarrassing.
And there's also, I've not been to journalism school, but I hang out with a lot of people who did get the proper paperwork to do my job. and a lot of what they study there is not just the techniques, but also here's what your responsibility is to readers. Sometimes a piece of news comes in and you don't have time to lock it down as absolutely true or dismiss it as completely false. And you have to make that call. Should you at least put out the information that there are people who are talking about this topic? And sometimes you say, I don't know if this is true or not. We have to make sure we couch it as completely unconfirmed, but people are going to be looking to us for information about this topic, and we have to be the ones to tell them that here's what we know, which is not much.
Right.
So there's ways to fall on the wrong side of the line either way, but sometimes you do have to go forward and say, here's something that is getting a lot of discussion right now, and here's what we know about it.
As long as you say, you know, this is, as you said, this is the source. And it may or may not be credible.
Thanks for the page views, sucker. I mean, we've done that too in the past. When a story is big enough, you almost are compelled because people are talking about
Everybody's
it.
Everybody's interested, saying it. Right?
They want your take on it. They want to know. They want your help to determine if it's true or false. And I think there is, like Andy said, a lot of value in the conversation and issues around it, even if that specific instance
in this case
isn't a real story.
Culta Mac did the right thing, and others did the right thing by pointing back to the Reddit story and saying this is the source, because that does let readers at least decide. Where I have problems is where, and you do this, Imore, and I understand why you do it, because you can't reveal your sources. You'll say things like, a source that has previously been accurate.
Yeah.
And the problem is there's no way for us to judge that. You know,
it comes down to our reputation. I mean, if we get enough right, then people will start to give us credibility. And if we blow a lot of them, then we'll lose that credibility. So we have to make sure that we have a high enough confidence in printing that rumor that we're willing to stake our credibility on it.
Mm. It's also bears mentioning that especially where Apple's concerned, you can have the story absolutely locked. I mean, you've got this story cold. But then 3 weeks before the thing that is inevitably going to happen, that you have multiple sources, multiple paper documentation. Look, the hall has been booked.
You're holding it in your hand.
Literally. I got into that situation exactly once where it was I had everything, and that I knew. I also knew that the person who was rumored to be giving this talk, the presentation, he actually is unavailable on this day. And also that just point after point after point after point where you could not have more information that this is going to happen. And then then within 2 weeks of the things inevitably supposed to happen, it didn't happen. Someone got cold feet or decided this was not a good strategic idea for them, and they backed out at the last minute. So even if you felt as though you were completely confident saying, yes, here's exactly what's going to happen, here's the date it's going to happen, and here's exactly what's going to be discussed, you don't know until, you know, as I say time and time again, I don't believe an Apple rumor until Tim Cook is standing on a stage holding it in his hand and being photographed by 500 people.
And even
at
then,
that point, at that point, I will say, yes, but I thought it's see, there's, you didn't see the back of it. And you know what? The tablet is just thick enough to be a Pez dispenser if it were a Pez dispenser. So I'm not going to completely, I'm 95% sure, but not 100%.
When his head turned, the polygons didn't render perfectly.
Well, and that's the other side of the coin is you can go too far in being a skeptic. So it's good to be conservative. Yeah. Anyway, I say all this as a prologue to the Apple iPhone rumor roundup, which we're about to go into.
Let's go on that. But first, I'll just say in passing that 2 days ago, I realized that there was a hole in my life and realize that, wow, it's been almost 6 weeks until anybody has had any interest in talking about iPad mini or Apple TV rumors.
Yeah. It just
so this is how these things go. There's like waves of interest.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes
it's iPhone 5 series or new iPhone series.
Sometimes I think I conflate interest and the number of stories confirming a rumor as somehow making it more realistic or more believable. And I don't even know if that's true, because the Screw is a good example. I mean, all the big blogs, all the big Apple blogs reported
it. To Andy's point, previously, I mean, there's that famous story of Steve Jobs not liking the plastic screen on the original iPhone and getting it changed in a matter of weeks.
Yep.
They are, I think, one of the fastest manufacturing companies in the world. So exactly what Andy said, until someone on Apple is holding it up on a stage and the press release hits, it's not confirmed.
Now, I have to point out, that is not going to happen again, because that was when the iPhone first came out.
Yes.
They know now that the minute they put anything in in the store, they're going to have 5 million orders in the first hour. So they cannot change things on a dime as they used to. They've been manufacturing the new iPhone.
They can decide not to launch on a dime, though. I mean, if it's a new product, they can decide not to launch
on a new product. Sure, but I think the new iPhone is written in stone at this point. Yes, in fact, they're probably making it.
I think that at this point, if the September 12th rumor is true and it really does have all the hallmarks of an actual leak as opposed to just an unbiased rumor, then yeah, they really have to be committed at this point. But I do think that if Apple found a flaw that they felt like they needed to correct or really strongly wanted to correct, in the absence of any actual commitment to ship, they would delay a month in order to get that done.
They call them showstoppers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the advantage to being in September as opposed to October.
You know what? Somebody in the chat room just said this, and I forgot. Remember Apple put ThinkSecret out of business? ThinkSecret was the original Apple rumor blog. And put them out of business by suing them. They haven't done that lately. Did Apple give up? Or are these blogs more careful? Renee, you'd be a perfect guy to talk about this. Don't you worry that you'll be ThinkSecreted?
You know, it's interesting exactly what you said. Originally, Apple would even send cease and desists if companies put up leaked parts or leaked designs. But I think at a certain point, they realized that just affirms those leaks. It actually adds maybe a layer of credibility to it. And by staying silent, it becomes much more difficult to sort out the noise from the signal. And this was interesting. On Apple's last conference call, Peter Oppenheimer was talking about the damage to Apple's financials that leaks about future iPhones cause to sales of current iPhones. And Tim Cook, I don't know if it was a different point of view, but he said that if people were lusting after or wanting future Apple products, he was okay with that as long as they were wanting future Apple products.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a little common sense is leaked in. ThinkSecret reported the Mac Mini in 2004. It was, in fact, announced at Macworld in 2005. Apple sued over trade secrets and put the site out of business in 2007, 5 years ago.
If you look at us, I mean, we got the September 12th date, and originally people weren't certain, but I think within a day and certainly within 24 hours,
everybody
confirmed the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Jim Dalrymple at The Loop, The Verge.
But how much of that is groupthink? How much of it is saying, well, Renee's pretty good, Imore's pretty good, and let's say it's true, and how much of it is their own reporting? I mean, I have to admit, when I hear the Times, the Journal, and you guys, I say, well, it's true. But is that wrong? Are they all just, you know, riding on your back?
I don't think they put their credibility on my back just yet.
So they have their
own.
We've
been okay.
They must have been fairly
accurate, but but I don't think that any major newspaper would stake their reputation on anyone else's sources at this point.
I know, because I watched Aaron Sorkin's show, The Newsroom, and it was very clear that if they didn't have two sources, they were not going with it. So that must be.
If it's on TV, Leo, it's true.
Exactly. If it's HBO drama. If it were Lifetime Channel, then there'd be some wiggle room for belief. But this isn't just
TV. It's HBO.
If Aaron Sorkin put pen to paper, you have to believe it.
Yeah. But yeah, it seems as though in the past year and a half, 2 years, there are sometimes things where, where sometimes you look at a painting that you don't know whether you realize that there's a forgery somewhere here. One of these five Degas is a forgery, mm-hmm. and you don't know anything about art, but there's something about number three that says, this one has the shape of a forgery. This is not what I expect to see from this artist. In the past year and a half, 2 years, there have been sometimes when there are rumors that come out, you don't know for sure. You can't pin something down, but it has the shape mm-hmm. of something that of information that Apple wanted out there for whatever reason that we can't speculate about. And that's why I tend, that's why I'm booking tickets for September 12th.
Oh, you are? That's the test I use. Is Andy flying?
It's, yeah, and now it comes down to, do I have to pay my own money or am I going to talk
we'll fly out. That's a done deal.
In that case, it's a done deal.
Okay. If you're flying, I'm buying.
Exactly. It worked.
Yeah,
I'm going to Legoland, everybody.
I'm getting it's vacation time in September. It's the best point time of year one, to come to San Francisco,
point,
actually.
Point number one, talk about how you never take a vacation. Point number two, talk about dance, master marionette, dance.
Masterfully executed.
Sorry.
He punked
me.
Was
that out loud?
I've been punked. Let's take a break. When we come back, the punker and the punky and Renee Ritchie from iMore.
If you can't find anything in coach, give me business class, give me first class. It's okay. It's covered.
Go ahead. Book it. I'll pay for it.
Oh, he's not commercial. It's okay. He's not hearing.
We better pay for Andy's ticket. Here's a word from Citrix. This ad will pay Andy's. You can listen to this ad. Or you can let Andy stay home. It's up to you. This ad brought to you by Citrix, the folks who do all those great products. We talk about them a lot, but the one I want to talk about right now is their online meeting software. You know, I'm kind of excited. We'll find out if this is going to happen, Chad. GoToMeeting has been screen sharing. They've been doing that for years, and it's the best. It's easy to set up. It's does what's called NAT traversal, so you don't have to punch a hole in the firewall. You don't have to get the IT department involved. It's really simple to start a meeting. It's a click of the mouse. The invitations get sent out. People to join your meeting, and this is important, especially if you're doing like a sales presentation or you're pitching somebody. You don't want to make them jump through hoops. So it's very easy for them to join. They just click the link. The software is installed fresh each time, by the way, very quickly in about 30 seconds. And they're there. They're on it. But this is what's really cool. You can now join a meeting. There he is on his iPhone, on your iPad, on your Android tablet. And if you're on the iPad or a desktop, you can send video. And this is the thing I'm excited about. We're talking with their engineers about starting to use their video perhaps for our shows. Because I have to tell you, I've used it. It's easily the best video, but much better than that, Skype or anything else. Secure, fast, easy. You got to love this. Go to meeting with the HD Faces video now. On the iPad, you could share your picture from the iPad. I want you to try it free for 30 days. Visit the GoToMeeting website. Click the orange try it free button. And then when you do that, you're going to be asked for your first name, last name, email address, and see that link for promo code. Click that because I want you to put in the promo code MACBREAK, MACBREAK, so that Andy gets to fly here. That's GoToMeeting.com. Use the promo code Mac Break. And we thank them for their support for all of the stuff we do on Twit. September 12th. What day? Is that a Wednesday?
That is a Wednesday.
Yeah, it means we're going to have to flip-flop Mac Break Weekly as usual. Do you think, okay, this is interesting. Now, remember when the second iPhone, I think, the iPhone, what was it, the iPhone 3? No, 2.
3G.
3G came out. Was that 2008? It was.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I did the 24 hours of iPhone from the cottage. You remember that? And I stayed up all night. Talked to people waiting in line and stuff. And it hasn't been as exciting really since. Do you think this new iPhone will be as exciting as that?
I don't think so for a couple of reasons. Remember that there was nothing that existed about the iPhone before the iPhone existed. Also, I can't think of any other product, including the iPad, that was as heavily hyped. I mean, for 3 months, I had a steady schedule of telling people what it was like to actually hold an iPhone in my hand and use it for 38 minutes because I'd had my briefing, and I'm talking to like everybody who's like, but what's this going to be? What's that going to be like? And that's just absolutely unprecedented. And also remember that now it's no longer such an exotic thing. You see them everywhere. And also people can pretty much buy them any day of the week. And thirdly, Apple's running out of great things to do. So they could come up with a really huge and lovely surprise for everybody. But remember that every subsequent model was, oh my God, this is the one that actually uses high speed data. Oh my God, this is the one that has that incredibly great display. Oh my God, this is the one that has a camera that's as good as any camera that you'll have in your pocket. Now based on rumors, a lot of it is like internal hardware stuff that has a benefit to the user but doesn't translate immediately to. You remember the old days when you have a phone that you would drop and it would fall on the ground? This time it's the iPhone ISS. You basically let go of it; it just simply hovers.
Yeah, now if they do that, I'm doing 24 hours.
Hover phone. I'm definitely upgrading for the hover phone.
The hover phone.
If especially if it's like enough propulsion, you could put like a small mouse or like a hamster on it. Because I think that would be pretty awesome, having a floating hamster tray.
Let's do the rumor rundown. See what we know, what we don't know. I think because I think Imore Renee was the first to publish the date September 12th. You're now pretty much confirming that. Pre-orders, this is the new bit of information, on that day, at least in the U.S., and released 9 days later. So, but this is kind of how it's been of late. This isn't too much of a surprise.
No, but it is same-day pre-order. Last year, it was the event on the Wednesday, the pre-orders on the Friday, and before that, it's varied to a greater degree. Right. So if this is accurate, Apple is being very aggressive about getting it out there.
You're also saying that you've learned the second wave of iPhone launches, international launches, will begin in the first week of October, likely October 5th. That's pretty quick, too.
I believe that's what they did last year. It was about 2 or 3 weeks later. But in the last year, the iPad 3 and the iPhone 4S, Apple was much faster and much larger in getting phones into international markets than they ever were before. And you never know, because they're going to a new phone, and traditionally panels have been a constraint for them. Like the iPad, it was hard to get those panels. Even the iPhone 4 was constrained. And if they have a new screen, you always worry, are they going to be able to get enough manufactured? But if they're being aggressive with it, I think that's a good answer.
That's the gating factor, isn't it? The manufacturer. Yeah. I'm just going to do timing first, then we'll talk about the actual product. I think that's all the timing. But we don't know countries specifically, just the first round of international.
The U.S., of course, will get it the first
U.S.
date.
First, then. Wouldn't that be something?
Canada, I live in Montreal, and Canada did get the 4S the same day, but we did not get the 4. We got the 4 several weeks later than the U.S., so you never know until they announce it.
Well, actually, that's how it is kind of with the Galaxy phones. They often ship, the Note shipped months before it shipped in the U.S.
Part of that was because they didn't know if they'd actually be able to sell it in the U.S. The Samsung Galaxy 3 was one of the handsets that was being targeted by Apple, for instance. Right. So that's why they got the Gala. That's why a lot of the tech blogs basically went internationally to get a copy of it.
That's what I did.
One was released to 2 months earlier, right.
And, this is going to be a tough decision for me because, of course, Samsung is, and we'll get to the trial later, but the battle royale, Samsung has announced that they're going to do the Galaxy Note 2. I was a big Note fan. August 29th. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a couple of weeks ahead of the Apple announcement. And it will be 5.5 inches. Samsung's not holding back. They said it's going to be 5.5 inches and it's going to be an unbreakable screen.
We'll find a way around that, Leo.
Well, it's a new technology. That's actually the one thing that gave me pause. I don't care about the breakable, unbreakable, but it's a new thin screen, almost a flexi screen technology. And so that will be interesting. I'll get both. Of course, I'll get both.
Absolutely.
We'll find out. I'm pleased with how durable it is. I've actually dropped my Galaxy 3 a couple of times and passed the incompetence test. So,
well, it was Steve Martin who told me. I asked him how do you like the 4S? He said, well, they took a great phone and then they made it out of glass and slippery. But
yeah,
it was an interesting choice. So we can start talking physicality. The newest rumor, unibody, that would be certainly more durable, would it not?
It would remove the back glass plate from the equation. It would have a metal plate except for the top and the bottom, obviously for the radios.
Much like the first iPhone, right? It was metal back with plastic top and bottom.
As far as I know, only Nokia can make radios go through stainless steel. Everyone else has to use radio transparent materials.
Aha. Right. Uh-huh. So they will have to have plastic.
Well, yeah, because you don't want to. It's not going to be the iPhone Faraday model where it's now clad in copper sheeting. No, never be disturbed by unwanted calls ever again.
It's an adamantium vibranium mix. That's just perfect for
exactly. That's what happened. It's not as I'm sorry. I was about to go into a 10-minute description of what's happening in Wakanda in the Marvel Universe, which nobody would have cared about.
So, is this a credible rumor? This unibody rumor?
I think we talked about it last time too. There were three prototypes. One was a 3.5-inch screen, similar to what it is now. One was a 4-inch screen. I believe there were two with 4-inch screens, and this was one of them. Apple always does that. They have, I think, like the cliche is 10 designs, 3 prototypes, 1 release. And I believe they had until July to decide. And based on all the parts leaks, it looks like this is the casing they went with.
A unibody case with a glass top. Yeah. Plastic top and bottom. That would be more durable, certainly. The glass back was...
Not necessarily. This is an area in which I recognize how little I know about engineering. I was talking to a couple of engineers about 11 months ago who were telling me that he made the argument to me that it's possible that the whole purpose of the glass back with that design was that if you happen to drop it and something was going to break, the Apple wanted the $20 sheet of glass at the back to break, the thing that's so easy that can be replaced. No, I'm serious. Something that can be replaced in like exactly 5 minutes by anybody with a screwdriver versus the incredibly expensive multi-layered display component at the front. I don't know if that's absolutely true or not, but I was trying to figure out why. He made a case about, well, here's what happens when you have something that's in a frame. The shock has to go somewhere, and unless you basically by choosing materials tell the laws of physics, please send all the force into this part instead of this part, anything can happen. It's the same reason why a car is designed so that it is designed so that parts of it are going to collapse and parts of it are going to take the damage and leave the center compartment pretty much alone.
That makes sense.
But it's just an idea. It's not something that I don't have an internal Apple memo pointed to that. So the fact that they've chosen this new tub like design, it's not necessarily to make it stronger.
Is it? Well, then why?
Well, Andy's point is exactly correct. In with the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 4S, you could just unscrew it, pull the back plate off, put on a new back plate. Right. The digitizer is much more expensive and difficult to replace, and this might give the actual phone greater structural integrity, but it might be at the expense of more expensive repairs when and if it does break.
Because if anything breaks, it'll be the glass on front.
It'll be the front, the digitizer,
right.
Which might be a new in-cell digitizer, which would be one component instead of two layers.
Do you think that it's liquid metal, or is it just plain old aluminum?
No.
No.
We haven't seen any product of that scale that's made out of liquid metal. Especially when you consider the volume of components that Apple that provider would have to manufacture. So I don't think that we'll see anything serious like that in liquid metal in the near future, as far as I know.
We've barely seen SIM ejectors out of liquid metal.
Exactly, and you still don't get them in all the phones now.
And I frankly don't know why they're any better than anything else. But okay. Motherboard points to, and this is from 9 to 5 Mac, photos of alleged next-generation iPhone motherboard surface point to new antennas and new battery.
Well, they need a new antenna to go LTE, and as far as I know, they are going LTE with this model. We don't know what countries.
They have to.
Yeah.
Well, the question is which countries, because you have, I think, 36 to 38 segments of LTE. Even though the bands are similar, the segments are so different that it's very difficult to support. I think you need a 9-band radio to support all the LTE segments. So the iPad only does North America, US and Canada for LTE. They would need 3 or 4 different models to make a global LTE radio.
Hence the successful lawsuit in Australia, Apple billing their iPad as 4G when it's not, except in the US and Canada.
And you're right, Leo. I don't know how much longer Apple can choose to not do an LTE iPhone, even if it has to be a US only edition. Over the next year, one of the biggest problems that Apple has to deal with is they have to make sure their next iPhone is still going to be an iPhone, because it's not as though an iPhone buyer is a sheep and they're never going to consider buying anything else. I'm just saying that it's a very, very powerful thing when you have something that works great for you and you've been very, very happy with. Just like your dad, like he bought a Ford car because his last 5 cars have been Fords. They all worked incredibly well, and that's why he's the first dealership he hits is a Ford dealership. But the first time he breaks that buying pattern. And then it's 2 years later, he forgot that he used the iPhone for the first 2 or 3 years. And now he's more open to try other things. So I think it's if LTE, and I think a lot of people are at this stage are going to say, why am I, if I'm going to be spending the exact same amount of money every single month for data, why am I not getting broadband speed data? And I think that Apple has to, at this point, has to get LTE on that phone.
It's by the, hook or by the crook. Old saying, customer retention is way less expensive than customer acquisition. And they're,
exactly,
to Andy's point, they're going to want that. And I think that's also why the screen's going to 4 inches. If Tim Cook's goal is to sell more phones and Johnny Ive's goal is to make the biggest screen possible, they right now sell about half the phones on US carriers, but some people are going to choose a bigger screen over Apple. Some people will choose Apple, some will choose a bigger screen. And if they can make a bigger screen, maybe that goes to 55% or 60%. And that's a good jump for Apple on a new generation phone.
Is it safe to say that Apple is at an unusual juncture, that they are starting, they do need to start looking over their shoulder? They haven't had to in the past. They had such a lead on everybody else.
I think so. Every time that I am the sort of person who I will be looking at, every time there's a crowd shot of in the Olympics, both the opening and the closing ceremonies, here are the people who have spent, the voiceover saying, and here's Renee Williams, who has spent 13 years of her 16 years becoming one of the most elite, and all the story. And I'm thinking, okay, what brand of phone? Oh, that's not an iPhone. Okay, I think it's an HTC, but I think it's two generations old. And so I really do look at these things. And you see the days when if you saw someone with a smartphone in their hand, it was guaranteed there was going to be an iPhone. That's long in the past. Now, if I'm on a subway, there's a larger chance it's going to be by any other manufacturer. If I'm at Panera, if I'm at another public place where people are using their devices, iPhone is just another brand that I'm seeing. So I think that's not the definitive market research, but I think that that's a data point that I have to consider pretty carefully, that if there was a specific panache, if there was a specific eliteness or attraction to the iPhone, it's not nearly as great as it was just a year ago. I mean, I've been walking around with the Galaxy 3 for the past couple of months alongside my regular phone, and it's just like having this. It's almost like the first year of walking around with an iPhone. I mean, at Chipotle, I was getting a burrito and I was just checking my mail, and the person assembling my burrito, "Ooh, is that the Galaxy 3? Like, wow. Is it as awesome as everybody says it is?" And I said, "Wow. Yeah. Oh my God, that's my dream phone." I'm like, wow, someone has just said an Android phone is their dream phone. The world is not 180 degrees out of shift with how I understand it to be, but I have to pay attention to these data points that I'm collecting as I go through life.
Well, and to that point, Apple stores have started price matching iPhone discounts from carriers. Yeah. So that's something Apple never had to do before. They're discounting the iPhone 4S and 4 models by $49 and one penny, but you have to ask for it to match the other. Who else is it? Best Buy that's selling it at that price. And this is only, not online, but only in the retail stores. This is from MacRumors.com. That may also be because the new iPhone's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Although Apple doesn't traditionally price match, but they seem to be price matching this time.
This is a first for them?
I'm not sure if it's a first, but it's definitely not their usual modus operandi.
Yeah. Retail stores have been giving authorization to match discounted prices from approved major retailers and carriers, but you have to ask for it. So if you're going in to buy an iPhone today, say, hey, I want that Best Buy price or Target price or Sprint price. Sprint's the one that dropped it down to $150 for the iPhone 4S 16 gig.
I mean, they've done that before. I mean, the carriers and the retailers have discounted iPhones when the next iPhone was imminent. Right. Apple has not.
Carriers can do that because they're going to make the money anyway. $50 here or there, who cares? We're going to get $2,500 off of you over the next 2 years. And if we can get you now, we got you for 2 years.
Right.
Let's get you now while we can.
And that phone will be $100 in about a month, so they're getting an extra $50.
That's right. Yes. Right. That's exactly right. Here's an interesting article, MIT Technology Review. Somebody's going to have to explain this to me. The iPhone has passed a key security threshold.
It's a Steve Gibson topic, Leo.
Yeah, you no idea, huh? This Simpson Garfinkel, who is really a good security guy. Apple has crossed a significant threshold. Technologies the company has adopted protect Apple's customers' content so well that in many situations, it's impossible for law enforcement to perform forensic examinations of devices seized from criminals. I don't know why I'm laughing at that. It just makes me happy.
No, but
I don't know why. I shouldn't. They're bad guys. But
I
don't want him looking at my phone.
Yeah, we are living in a, given that all the information that's on the phone, and given that how that these forensic tools are basic consumer products in law enforcement, that's not like you're being suspected of terrorist activity. This phone is being put into a special evidence pouch and sent to a really, really super top secret lab in the NSA that only processes 8 phones a year. It's like, no, this local police department spent $1,800 for this piece of software. You stupidly, when the officer said, "Hey, is that a new iPhone? Can I see it for a sec?" you don't know that in the 5 minutes right. in which he was supposedly checking your license back in the car, he actually did forensics on your phone.
Right.
And you might not ever know that actually happened. I'm not saying that this is happening widespread, but you know that these tools are out there that make it very, very easy for an unprotected phone to have all of its data copied and examined with very, very little oversight. So if you have a police officer or an investigator with a, let's say, a jaunty view of individual rights, which I don't believe is in the mainstream of the law enforcement community, but there are a few of those isolated incidents out there. The amount of information they can get off your phone and have very little trouble and very little time is just awe-inspiring. And so this is if I turned off the feature where you wipe your phone after 10 failed password attempts a couple weeks ago when that iCloud breach happened, iCloud problem happened. Now I've turned it back on. So I would like to see the idea of like a bad lieutenant. accidentally yes. erasing my entire phone and not being able to get it back.
So
you're right to laugh.
It may be disinformation, but according to the Department of Justice's director of the cybercrime lab at the Computer Crime and Intellectual Property section in the DOJ said, "I can tell you from the Department of Justice perspective, if that drive is encrypted, you're done. When conducting criminal investigations, if you pull the power on a drive that is whole disk encrypted, you have lost any chance of recovering that data." Again, it could be disinformation. Mm-hmm. But this is Simpson Garfinkel, who's very, I think, very good on security issues and so forth. He says Apple's security architecture is so sturdy and so tightly woven into its hardware and software that it is both easy for consumers to use encryption on their phone and very difficult for someone to steal the encrypted information.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was the old cliche, right? Like, if you had physical access, it was game over.
Right.
And now it's easy enough for consumers to flip a bit and have full encryption almost without knowing anything about it.
Yeah. They're using 256-bit AES encryption. It's unique. The AES key in each iPad or iPhone is unique to each device and is not recorded by Apple or any of its suppliers. Burning these keys into the silicon prevents them from being tampered with or bypassed and guarantees they can be accessed only by the AES engine. So Simpson says, what this means in practice is when iOS devices are turned off, the copy of the encryption key in the computer's accessible memory is erased. It's no longer preserved. That's why an investigator who gets a suspect's phone would have to try all possible keys, the task deemed impossible by the NSA. Again, that's what they say.
This is the X factor that keeps us buying Apple stuff again and again and again. The stuff that we can't really evaluate so much of the thinking that goes into Apple features. But you know that at some point somebody has thought long, except for, again, these outlying cases. Engineers at Apple think long and hard about, well, if this is going to be secure, we have to make it secure. Here's how to do that. And it's being done at the OS level, at the storage level, and at the hardware level, all working together so that if we promise our customers that your data is secure, it is secure. I don't think there's any other company, technology company, where you have that sort of implicit understanding that there's an excellent chance that this company did not screw this feature up.
Yeah. So, well, and they did until the 3GS came out. But once the 3GS was out,
right.
The PIN key, so when you use your PIN key, that locks it and encrypts it. And unless they can brute force the PIN key or you give it to them. And by the way, I have to say, every time I talk to law enforcement, they say, well, you know, most of the time these guys just give us their keys. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to cooperate. They give us the keys. So most of the time, I don't think they're all that worried about it. But here's the deal. The software to brute force has to be run on the phone itself, limiting the guessing speed to 80 milliseconds per PIN number. Trying all 4-digit PINs requires a mere 13 minutes for 4 digits. If the user chooses a 6-digit PIN, 22 hours, 9-digit PIN, 2.5 years, 10-digit PIN 25 years.
You remember they also added not just the PIN, you can switch it to an alphanumeric password now as well if you want.
Which would be very
protection.
Effective. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
So just, you know, something that there's no crooks listening to this show. no, they're not. But a crook is not going to. And this is the other thing law enforcement always tells me. These guys are idiots. This is, you know, smart person doesn't become a crook. So I know that everybody's listening to this show is a smart person. So, but if you have private stuff on your phone and you want to keep it private, use a 10-digit numeric PIN, or better yet, turn on the alphanumerics. And I think eight alphanumerics would be more than enough to lock it down. Mm. As long as it's not, you know, something they can guess. All right. Thinner, higher capacity battery, 3.8 volts, 1440 milliamp hours. You know, I have to say, when I compare that to, let's say, the 2,500 milliamp hours in a Galaxy Note, or I think the S3
Razer
is...
Max.
Yeah, the Razer Max. This is... my battery here is... I think it's 2,100 milliamp hours. That doesn't sound like a whole lot, but I guess for a 3.5-inch screen, for that little iPhone, that's quite a bit.
Yeah. And also, it comes down to how Apple translates that into actual productive life.
Right.
They're doing a lot of things underneath the hood that might be better. They may not necessarily need a bigger battery to do what they need to do.
Yeah, this is 2,100 milliamp hours.
All they need to cover LTE. They need to cover the bigger screen, because it should be, according to rumor, 1136 instead of 960 high. And they need to cover the A5X chip instead of the A5 chip. So those are the three battery drains.
In a way, this is you know, kudos to Apple that they're able to get such good battery life on much smaller capacity batteries.
Yeah.
1440 milliamp hours is not huge by any means.
They should have a way better LTE chip on the new iPhone than they had with the iPad 3.
Right.
It should be maybe an on-die chip by now.
Yeah.
They're saying it'll still probably be the A5. Maybe they'll call it the A5X because it'll have a few extra things. Confusing you with Kyle Weems. Renee Ritchie, does that conform with what you've heard?
Well, the iPad 3 had an A5X chip, and it was mostly the quad-core GPU was the big addition to it. And so far, Apple has put the previous iPad's chip in the new iPhone. They might mess it around a little bit because it's smaller, doesn't have to push around as many pixels, but it's a good bet.
Would they need quad core, or maybe they would stick for battery life, stick with a dual core A4?
Well, the quad core is only on the GPU, and I believe it's only for specifics. I believe AirPlay uses one of the cores, and Apple usually doesn't just put specs in for specs, and they don't even tell you the specs. They'll tell you the feature. Like, they won't say NFC. They'll say buy at Starbucks. They won't say quad core graphics. They'll say AirPlay. So they'll power them down and turn them on if they need them.
The other thing is that, remember that Apple, more than any other phone manufacturer, they don't imagine that you're going to be using your phone as a handheld device. They also want you to be using it as a feeder of video and gaming for an Apple TV or an Apple space bar TV.
Right. So it has to do it. I think it's reasonable to say it has to do everything the iPad 3 does.
iPad 3, if you remember, if you just use that as a Wi-Fi hotspot, it'll go for 24 hours, which is...
Well, it's got a lot more room for a battery.
On LTE. Yeah,
I take
absolutely.
It back. It doesn't have to do everything the iPad 3 does. It can't go that long, obviously.
Right.
Go ahead.
It does suggest kind of a point, though. Is there any reason in which Apple would make their iPhone a little bit thicker? If engineers came up to them and said that, we feel as though we need to put LTE in, or we need to support this larger screen, the only way to do this is to make it 1.2 millimeters thicker than last year's model. Would that be a source of friction or stiction against adding a feature that they were a little bit on the fence about to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the new iPad is a millimeter or so thicker, and they were willing to make that compromise. But I think with the iPhone, instead of going thicker, it's going to be a little bit bigger. The 16x9 screen will make it a little bit taller. So instead of flattening it out the entire length and width, they're just going to push it up, and that'll make more room for the battery. So instead of the thickness, you're getting height. Mm.
This is a little bit more in the, not far-fetched, but less credible rumor. This comes from nowhereelse.fr, which has a notoriously bad record.
One of those bluechip.fr URLs, yes.
I can't read French, so I'm looking at the Mac Rumors story about the 9-pin connector. These are reportedly pictures of the new connector, and you see at the top there is a USB connector, just to give you a sense of size. It's small. It's teensy-weensy. And apparently the one that we're looking at doesn't have 9, but has 8 pins.
And the ring is counted as the ninth.
The ring is the ninth.
Yeah.
The ring is the grounding pin, so it is a nine-pin connector.
I do read, I'm in Montreal, so I do read French, and I looked it over, and we heard that back in February, we heard Apple was switching to a miniaturized dock, the same way they're doing the Nano SIM and some other things. They want to save as much room for battery as possible. But the pin numbers, I think TechCrunch said 19, and iLounge said 8, and then 9to5 Mac, Mark Gurman, found references in iOS 6 to a 9-pin connector, which sounds right. It sounds like 8 pins plus the ring around it, and they might be some. You might have two sets of 8 pins, so you can plug it in upside down or right side up.
That would be nice, because that's a real pain with the micro USB. You got to get it just right, and I'm always flipping it around.
I spent about a day going through 30 pins, and the Apple's 30-pin connector is under NDA for their dock partner program, so it's not always easy to find that information about it. But they had a lot of legacy pins. They had two reserved pins, and they have line in, line out, left and right. They have a lot of things in there. FireWire became HDMI, so you can't just ditch the old FireWire pins. But USB, they could get down to 4. HDMI, they could get down to 4. They usually have a proprietary pin that detects what kind of accessory it is. So it sounds possible that they could actually get it that small.
It sounds tight. Yep. So when you just described it, 4 plus 4 is 8. Plus ground. I mean, the proprietary pin, do they have room for it?
Well, that's USB would have ground, data in, data out, and power.
They so one of the four USBs is the ground. So that's 4. Yeah.
And then HDMI, it needs data, and it needs clock. It needs two data, two clock, and it could share the ground with the USB.
So that's got to be 4. So now we got 8. And then there's a special pin that says, I am not compatible.
Yes.
The I am not compatible pin.
The HDCP warning of dock connectors.
A special pin devoted only to ruining your day and sending you back to the store for a new $80 speaker dock.
So would this give us all the capabilities of the 30-pin port? Not the analog audio, obviously. We don't need that anymore.
The 30-pin also had serial in, serial out, which many people use. But yeah, so you would need a better breakout box.
Scientific instrumentation using the 30-pin port would need that.
Yes.
I guess it could switch to US. They could use USB instead.
Yeah, they would have, basically Apple would be outsourcing that component to the accessory maker.
Mm. Converting the serial data to USB.
Yeah. And maybe HDMI could be broken out into old style, like analog. I don't know if they'd still do composite and component, but it's theoretically possible.
There is a HDMI compatible USB, micro USB port.
Apple prefers to provide a dongle for the European Union's micro USB laws instead of the connector.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, though. I mean, this is USB and HDMI. They could have used a micro. It sounds like they could have. Maybe there's that one extra I don't work with you pin that we couldn't fit in there.
And they also have changed the pins around. The 30-pin has changed significantly since it was first introduced. I mean, they ditched 6 FireWire pins, and they added 4 HDMI pins.
So. But still, it begs the question, if they're going to do a 9-pin connector, why didn't they just do micro USB?
You still have that dock licensing. I mean, you could theoretically put a lot of stuff in software now, too. I mean, you could have a lot of that abstracted out of the actual physical connector. But I think Apple likes to be the, what's the politest way of putting it, the captain of their own destiny.
I think that's a mistake. Do we know anything about the adapter, the 9-pin to 30-pin adapter?
We heard there will be one because immediately, of course, people heard that they panicked that they would be throwing out their accessories in the garbage. But it sounds like it'll work for cables. It may not work for things that had physical sizes that required the phone plugged in very tightly. But for anything that's a cable or has space for the connector, you would just slip it in between the old dock and the new one.
Tell you how many devices I have where with a 30-pin dock.
Yeah. But that's a very easily mechanically solvable problem. You're going to see a Kickstarter within 3 seconds of that release saying, here is a little mini platform of CNC aluminum that you just simply lay the adapter into, and it'll give you mechanical support between whatever you've already docked it into to whatever you're about to add things to.
Mini DisplayPort, MagSafe 2. Apple's been doing this historically.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I know.
And it works out. It's a bummer for when you've had this clock radio for about a year and a half, 2 years, and it's been working great. It's a bummer if you've got a hardwired dock in your car. But this is one of the, and you know that I'm not a fan of Apple indiscriminately decided to drop a popular port. But and when it comes to the iPhone, when it comes to a device that's this small, where every millimeter of space is so important and so valuable and such a cause of fighting, I believe, inside of engineering on, can we get this area for this? Can we put this feature in here? Can we use this chip? I think that, yeah, I mean, at some point, if they really want to keep moving the iPhone forward, they're going to have to get rid of that big harmonica connector.
And they have things like Wi-Fi sync and AirPlay now. So over the air is handling a lot of what the cable used to. And to your point, Leo, I think an Apple vernacular, it would be, and unlike micro USB, our connector is symmetrical. So it's easier to plug in. Yeah.
That would be a winning point, actually. That's something in its favor.
Yeah.
Gizmodo had a piece. Let me just go back to this and see where they got it from, because I doubt they made this table. That shows all the different pinouts. This is from...
Most of those, in my experience, weren't... I went through a ton of them last week, and most aren't accurate because the latest version, again, is under Apple's dock partner program, and no one wants to risk...
Nobody can know. Yeah.
No one wants to risk violating.
Wait a minute. Now, if would it make any difference to you if I told you this was from pinouts.ru?
they're a good source, but I believe their latest still has the FireWire pins, which Apple has switched to HDMI.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Look, there's S video.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of garbageio on here. So
the
I guess
unknown
they could
port
do
on their list is a video port too. So they had tons of video ports.
Isn't that funny? Well, yeah. Remember that? I mean, yeah. I mean, I can remember back to all the things, all the weird. Remember, you could connect an iPod to TV with a special S video dock and all of that. And that's all legacy stuff that's still in there. You know what? I understand. It makes a lot of sense. You make more room. You get rid of a lot of legacy that nobody's been using for years. But if, and I keep saying this, so I'll say it one more time, and I'm never going to say this again. If Apple is, in fact, looking over its shoulder as the little Samsung Galaxy S3 is catching up, is this the right time to give Apple users one more reason to make a switch?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think that the central theme of Apple's story is always that they're going to do, they have a clear vision of where they want to go and the product they want to make. And barring real information that this is going to be the, like, a using the Titanic to ship carloads of Edsels across the ocean, Apple is going to go ahead and do that. They're ready to be proved wrong when they believe in something, but they're going to go, if they really believe that this is the right way to go, they're just going to go ahead and do it.
And we are agreed now that it's 9 pins, not 19.
I mean, it depends if it's really bidirectional. Are they going to call it 16? I mean, we'll have to wait and see what language they use for it. But I think, again, Apple's not going to tell us how many pins it is. They don't think we should care or worry about that.
Yeah,
no, it's not.
I'll just say it works.
This is not
the interesting
not the
thing
pins
is
you're
we heard
for.
They're going to do it across the line, like not just on the iPhone 5, but all the iOS devices will be updated to support.
Well, that's the other
small
interesting
dock.
Rumor that they'll announce new iPads with this new 9-pin connector.
Which historically, they switched the Infineon baseband chip mid-run on the, I forget it was a 4 or the 4S, and they've done small technical changes to phones mid-life before, and it's probably again going to be, oh, the new versions just have a mic. They're not going to make a big deal about it. Even if they do other things, like improving the thermals or something, they'll probably just say, oh, it's the same iPad you bought 6 months ago. You don't have to worry about it, but if you buy it now, it has this new connector on it.
Yeah. My iPhone 4S is such an integral part of my Sonos system with the Sonos dock, and it's how I listen to audiobooks and stuff. I'll keep my 4S.
Yeah.
Big deal. I don't need a new iPhone. We're going to take a break, come back with more. We've got the lovely and talented Renee Ritchie. I didn't realize you were in Montreal. That's
I
cool.
Am.
That's neat. Nice city. Of imore.com. Do I have to say Renee Ritchie?
On peut parler français si tu veux, Leo.
Oh, it's so sexy. And Monsieur Randy Anatko.
Oh la la.
Bruce and Galaja.
Well, Inako is Russian, right?
According to all the Russian people I've ever met, yes. They don't. When I tell them that my grandparents emigrated from a country other than Russia, they say, oh no, cannot possibly be from that country.
You are Russian.
It's either Ukrainian or Great Russian.
You are one of us. One of us.
Yes, it's like I said, my name is Jablankowicz, but no, there are no Polish people or Jews anywhere in my background. It's like they will not believe that I'm telling them is true.
You're Russian. Khenatka. Of course you are Russian.
You are built for winter combat. I can see this.
Take a look at him. My God, if he put a fleece hat on, we'd say, Tovarish.
The premier is in wonderful health.
I can see you on the wall on the May Day at Red Square going, yeah. We're going to take a break. Come back with more with Andy Inotko and Rene Rishi. But first, a word from FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing. This is an example of cloud done right. When I first started using FreshBooks to do my invoicing, I didn't even really, I don't think the word cloud was in wide use. I didn't think of it as cloud invoicing. I just thought, this is great. You go to FreshBooks.com, you upload your logo, prints very professional invoice. Prints, no, well, you can print, but it emails these invoices. And at first I was a little nervous. Now, remember, this is when I first started using it. This is when they first started in 2004. I thought, oh, 8 years ago. Oh, everybody wants paper invoices. You know, I was surprised. No. They were very happy with those. One of the things I liked, you'll like this, Renee, currency's no problem. So if I was invoicing Rogers in Canada, which I was, I could do it in Canadian dollars. It automatically made the conversion. I loved that. And now one of the things I really like about FreshBooks is that that email has a pay now button. And I'll tell you, it turns out your clients actually do want to pay you. Who knew? It's just as much of a pain for them to pay you as it was for you to print out and mail invoices. So if they have a pay now button, they pay. So it saves you time with easy invoicing creation. And it, by the way, preserves the invoice so you can just, for each month, new month, just new month. If you do hours, it's great for that. They have an iPhone app, but they also have a web app that will do time and hours and then automatically put it in the invoice so you don't have to do any calculations. As I said, the currencies makes that easy as well. You get paid faster because of the online payments. If that you have a client who's slow pay, no problem. They automatically will do invoice follow-ups. You could set that up in seconds. And you never, you can always see from your dashboard who owes you money, who's paid. So this is really, really slick and very professional. You're just going to love FreshBooks. For small businesses, this is a fabulous, fabulous thing. I want you to try it right now. 3.5 million people like me discovered FreshBooks and have abused it, and I want you to join that group. You can try it free right now for 30 days of unlimited use. All these features you see at FreshBooks.com. You can have as many invoices, as many clients, even as many account users as you need. That's very helpful if you have other people in the business. They will send physical invoices. They'll print them out for a small fee and mail them. So go to FreshBooks.com and give it a try today. I really am a fan, and I'll tell you, it was just a lifesaver when I discovered it. FreshBooks.com, and if they ask, I don't know if they ask. If they ask, just say, hey, I heard it on MacBreak. And that way everybody will be happy. Happy, happy, happy. Sad to say, one of the things that we learned on Steve Jobs' death last year was that he had chosen for his kids to have a kind of normal house in normal suburban Palo Alto. And they lived comfortably, but they weren't behind a wall. And now I'm sad to say, I admit when I saw the house, I thought, that just seems like he should have had something. He should have had a wall.
A gate,
something, nothing. And nothing ever happened while Steve was around. But apparently in July, the house was burglarized. A thief stole $60,000 worth of computers and personalized items. Good news. Nobody was hurt, of course. And they do have a suspect who was arrested by the Silicon Valley High Tech Crimes Unit and is in jail waiting a court date later this month.
And it doesn't sound like Steve Jobs' house was targeted. It was just part of an ongoing, I think they said, 63% increase in burglaries in the community.
They asked him. They said, did you know that was Steve Jobs' house? He said, no, really? I should be. Oh, I was listening to MacBreak Weekly the other day. And they said the house was easily accessed. No, he didn't know that. He had no idea. He just said, no, I saw the house and I went in. I'm telling you, they're not the smartest people, these crooks. Not the smartest people. Ah, gosh. I almost don't want to start this conversation. The Apple's case has rested. Samsung now begins its portion of the trial, the Apple versus Samsung lawsuit. Every week now, we should make a special, Nightline style. Apple versus Samsung, day 7. I
John Stewart style.
More, yeah.
We should make it more like the Olympic coverage. There should also have been an opening ceremonies and a closing ceremonies. We're a parading of the lawyers.
And chariots of fire everywhere.
There are as many lawyers as there were nations in the Olympics, I believe.
Paul McCartney would still sing Hey Jude at the end of it.
And the budget was probably similar.
Yes. It's yielding a treasure trove of documents.
Lots of interesting stuff.
Anybody who's interested in not only the history of Apple, but also just the philosophies of Apple, what their priorities are, how they develop products. We're just getting boatload after boatload of primary documents being offered up by Apple directly, and also testimony from the key players and most of the decisions Apple's making the past 4 or 5 years. It's like I've got a folder of PDF after PDF after PDF that, I do research for what I write. I do research for the show. But more than anything else, it's like I really want to – this is fascinating stuff. I want to read all of this.
Right.
I hope this trial goes on forever.
I mean, like Apple does not just open the kimono, and it shows that I think whether you agree with Apple or not, the passion they have in prosecuting this case, that they are willing to show historical documentation that they probably would never, ever have shown otherwise.
Yeah, this really is the equivalent of the mayor saying, I could not have possibly murdered that person because I was in bed with my hooker prostitute mistress at the time. Here's video of it.
I didn't see that PDF.
See, that's why you don't just read the summaries you see on the blogs. You actually have to download, go to Scribd. I'd like to introduce Exhibit AA. Like,
I don't want to see that. Go see. So Apple wants $2.5 billion. This is interesting. They say, now we didn't just make that number up. It took literally, what did they say, millions of calculations.
Yeah, and like millions of dollars.
And millions of dollars, like $2.5 million to figure out how much Samsung owes us.
Yeah. It also was interesting because they pointed out that they tried to do a license with Samsung, and Apple broke down that they have three kinds of patents, the kind of standards, essential FRAND patents, and the computing patents, and the design patents, and they are incredibly loath to license out anything that they think gives them a distinctive or competitive advantage. And according to them, they believed Samsung was an important manufacturing partner, so they went there, and they broke down sort of, this is how much you owe us, but we'll give you 20% off because of our deal with Microsoft, and 20% off because we like you, and it was very odd from an Apple point of view.
Yeah, and that Microsoft had licensed these patents. Yeah. But the deal was they could, which might tell you something about cross license, but let me tell you something about why Windows Phone looks like it does. The deal was you can use these, but it can't look anything like an iPhone.
And for the better, I mean, I love the Lumia 900. It's fantastic looking. And I even like Android Slide to Unlock because they couldn't do what the iPhone does. I think there's a case to be made that things that don't look the same are better for us as consumers.
Yeah, it did. I've been giving Microsoft a huge amount of credit for saying, thinking differently and doing something different with the Windows Phone. Maybe they had to.
They wouldn't have done that if they felt. I think Samsung and Microsoft were both in the exact same position where they had. Here's the amount of exposure that we have. If we had to fight this out in court. How attached are we to the idea of doing something that is vaguely similar to an iPhone? If Microsoft said that we can certainly agree to this because we weren't planning on doing anything like that anyway, that's perfectly fine. If Samsung says no, we're not doing anything that any other tech company is not entitled to do, go beat bricks. One of the PDFs I was talking about is the proposal document, the presentation that Apple made to Samsung at the point in which they're saying, look, we know that you stole this stuff from Apple, from iPhone, and we don't want to go to the mattresses over this because we count on Samsung as a trusted and valuable supplier. So here's how we're going to broker this truce. And so you click on this document and say, oh, isn't that good? Because they tried to keep this out of the courts. But then you look at article after article after article in this presentation where they are essentially saying that any phone that does not a flip phone with an liquid crystal display and a 10-digit pad is infringing on the iPhone. There's a table on page like 18 I've got in front of me right now that essentially says that breaking down how much that the licensing should be for the year 2010, and Apple was expecting that Samsung owes Apple $53 million off of Symbian phones.
$9 for Windows Blackjack.
Yeah, it's like, well, like they're breaking it down. So here's, if it runs Android, then you owe us money. If it doesn't use a Microsoft operating system, you owe us money. There is almost no metric in this document in which Apple says that you can sell a cell phone that is in any way could be called a smartphone and not owe Apple money. I mean, this is a document that pretends as though the Trio never existed, that pretends that the BlackBerry phone never existed. Even these phones that have an integrated keyboard, at some point, well, we'll give you a discount, but you still owe us money because it has a color screen. It could do other things. This is almost a quote from the presentation that any phone that is more than just a phone, at some point you need to give us some money for this.
I do think that's when you walk into the car dealership and make the incredible lowball offer because you know it'll never be accepted, but you want to set up a good bargaining position. And I think also what you said about Microsoft versus Samsung, the big difference is that Microsoft is funded almost entirely by Windows and Office money, where if you look at who makes money in Android, there's Samsung, HTC makes almost none, and everybody else loses money. So for Microsoft, not copying anything from Apple is probably, you know, doesn't matter. But for Samsung, if they believe that being an iPhone not made by Apple is the reason they're making the amount of profit that they're making, they will never, ever, ever want to give that up because that to them becomes the reason for their success.
This is a great topic for discussion because so much of this is conceptual. So much of this is debatable and trying to understand what invention is like and what developing a product is like. There is certainly a position to be argued, especially with the 2010 Samsung Galaxy, that Samsung said, if there's any idea that we like from the iPhone, even visually, we will simply take it and put it into our phone. On the another way to read these documents is to simply say that if someone came up to your hamburger stand, if McDonald's came up to your hamburger stand and said, "We don't want to sue you, but we came up with the idea of a meat patty and in the middle of bread with vegetables and cheese. Yeah. That's ours." Now we don't want to be bullies here. If you just give us $8 for every hamburger you sell, we can settle this amicably.
I think Apple wanted $30, didn't they?
$30 for a phone, $40 for a tablet.
Yeah,
I don't know what the note would be. Maybe $35.
There's actually again, it's a great PDF because it really does break down what they think. There, here's in an Android based full touch.
$30 a phone is a lot. And by the way, we would pay for that because they just build that into the price of the phone.
What was really interesting for me, though, is that I was trying to think about Samsung. You know, they enter a lot of markets. They don't just make phones or consumer electronics. They make refrigerators and almost anything you can imagine. And I was thinking, if Samsung decided to get into the refrigerator business, they would look at refrigerators and make something like it because familiarity is a feature.
Have you ever seen a Samsung refrigerator? It looks just like General Electric's.
But what I found out, I was corrected by some of our readers who said that you actually have to license refrigerators. You have to license French doors, and you have to license freezers at the bottom. And it is exactly like the consumer electronics business.
Wow. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, we've only heard, by the way, Apple rested on, Friday? And now, starting this week, Samsung testimony has begun. So remember, we've only heard the first, you know, the pro-Apple stuff. We're going to hear testimony in Samsung's favor. In fact, yesterday they began their defense with a pair of witnesses who created technology similar to the Apple patents well before the Apple iPhone. You could tell if you look at it. I'm showing a picture of the HP iPack and something called the iMate smartphone that had rubber banding, pinch to zoom, launched. This is UI zooming. This came from Microsoft, actually.
The thing that's interesting, though, too, is, I mean, there's going to be a legal definition of copying. Is it a legal copy or an illegal copy? And I think some people want to pretend that Apple's completely wrong or Samsung is completely wrong, and there's no middle ground. And I think, for example, if you look at HTC or Motorola, that's a very different case than Samsung. You look, their cables look like dock cables. Their AC adapters look like Apple AC adapters. The Blackjack looked like a BlackBerry before Apple even came on the market.
Right.
And I think you could make a case that Samsung might have gone a step too far. Maybe it's not to the extent Apple said, but maybe it is a step too far, and you want to find some middle ground in between.
Is the jury given that option? Doesn't the jury have to find one way or the other? Isn't it black and white? Or can the jury? I guess the jury could say, "Well, we find in favor of Apple, we'll give you a penny,"
or we get, you know, these patents were violated, this trade dress was violated, but not this one.
All right. Well, it's too early to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. We're going to have a straw poll. I like these straw polls. So strawpoll.me, thanks to Dan Dirks for writing this. He wrote it for NSFW, but we're using it a lot. Strawpoll.me/2310. If you And I understand we haven't heard from Samsung yet, but you, if you were on the Apple versus Samsung jury, would you give Apple the win and $2.5 billion? Whoops. Yes, Samsung stole from Apple. I know. This isn't how the choice is going to come down, but no, Samsung innovated. It didn't copy. I'm sorry. I was asleep. What did you say? So those are your three choices. I think three you know, reasonable choices. Now, of course, we're watching. This is Mac Break Weekly, and I would fully expect the Macintosh crowd to fall. And, you know, it's interesting, though. We'll let the votes continue. I'll tell you what. We're going to do it. We'll pause for a commercial. Continue to vote. Strawpoll.me/2310. And when we come back from the commercial, we'll see what you, the jury, would say. I don't know. I wouldn't want to be put in that position, to be honest. I would love to review it, as Andy has, all the documents first.
What I would like, Leo, is, I mean, I owned a G1. I owned a Nexus 1. I own the Nexus 7 now. Mm-hmm. I'm not attracted to Samsung phones because I think Apple does that kind of phone better. And you can, again, people can like or not like Apple, but if you look at the iPod, the Mac, the command line interface with the Apple II, Apple has this a history of making products that are breakthrough at a consumer level. And even Sony with the Trinitron and the Walkman. I want Samsung to make that kind of universe-denting product. I want them to not just make a technically superior phone, but I want them to take their place amongst the giants of consumer electronics. And I think this might be a good chance for them to do that with a Galaxy 4 or whatever they do.
I like the Galaxy 3 plenty good. I don't know, you know.
I think the Galaxy 3 is a distinct product. We talk for a Mac show. We talk a lot about the Samsung.
We don't need to talk so much about it.
I'm loath to continue to talk about it. But yeah. What I would like to see on the same vent is I would like to see Apple make some acknowledgement that even the iPhone was built on the inspiration of successful products that came before it. They did not. When I was reading through this the document that came across yesterday, page after page after page seemed to create the impression that there was, you know that 75% of all cell phones had an actual extendable handset with a curly cord that went to the rest of it until Apple came in and solved
smoke
everything
signals
for everybody. Right. Yeah. And as opposed to, no, again, there was a whole family of big screen, like full screen stylus-based but still touch-based computers before then. The concept of a phone that is far, far more of a phone and more of a hybrid between a computer and a phone had been set into bedrock while they were developing the iPhone before they actually went on with it. The helpful thing that comes across from that document, I really think it's one of the key documents that's come to light in the past week, is that very correctly, Apple's philosophy here is that while developing the iPhone, they were planting crops. And those crops being the patents that are associated with this type of a device. And their feeling, I think, after the release of the iPhone is that they planted these seeds, they tilled the soil, they watered it, they tended the plants. Now the crops have come in. Now they've got corn as high as the elephant's eye. This is now, it's time to harvest, so to speak, which is not to say that they want to, their purpose is to stick up everybody like they're a patent troll, but they feel as though the reason why they tended to these crops so carefully is so that they could use this for their own advantage, so that if someone came up with a product that was, they felt was too similar to the iPhone, let's set aside the emotional question about whether it was stolen or not stolen, whether it's just evolution or whatever. If someone comes up with a product that is uncomfortably similar to the iPhone, they have this wonderful field of resources that they can use to try to get some pressure to, you know, kind of get them to ease off on that a little bit. Yeah. So I don't think it's hatred. I don't think that it's they're trying to bully anybody. I feel as though, again, they've got bushels and bushels of corn. I was going to say something, make a joke that was a really good pun, but about something that you do with corn, but I'm not going to say that.
Apple said they were just upset that Google gave it away to everybody, and that was the crux of their, I guess, of Steve Jobs' impetus for suing. Well, there was Xerox PARC before there was Mac. Apple is just good at taking existing technologies and making them mainstream.
Yeah, I don't know if it changes the case or not, but I mean, Apple took notifications from Android and put it in the iOS 5. I mean, I think there's cross-pollinization. The real question comes down to something that we can't know, which is intent. If Apple merely wants to harvest its corn, fine. If Apple wants to put Samsung out of business, I'm not so happy about that.
Well, Microsoft wants to make Android more expensive, and Apple wants to make it less usable, and that's how they both want to reduce competition.
And I think that that's not okay. I think it's fine to say, I want to license it. We invented it. You should license it. But it's, I don't think it's okay to say, oh, we want to put you out of business because we don't like the competition.
Yeah, I mean, I'm largely reacting to. I remember how years and years and years one of the clubs in the bag of the person who wants to convince people that Apple is not a great company is that, oh well, their one great thing they did was that was influential was the Macintosh, and they stole that from Xerox. And you have to raise your hand and say, well, no, they didn't. I mean, first of all, they licensed it. They licensed it. But if you compared what they were exposed to what they built inspired by that, the two things have some superficial interactions, but they're not. They didn't steal anything from anybody. Similarly, I think that when you look at let's expand this beyond Android. Any one of the devices that Apple in this document claims is stolen has Apple technology. I just feel the exact same sort of reaction as I did when I was defending Apple against this thing. Well, no, there's very, very little similarity between this iPhone and this device you're saying was stolen from iPhone and from Apple that is a generator of licenses. So this is a lot why I get a little bit my ire gets a little bit up when I talk about this sort of stuff.
Samsung makes it harder, though. I mean, with HTC and Motorola, I think that's absolutely true. But like the photos icon, Apple uses a sunflower on a blue background. So Samsung uses a yellow flower on a blue background. That's totally arbitrary. And those are little silly things that I think when you take, you add the dock cable, you add the AC adapter, you add the Chromebook that looks like a Mac Mini. When taken as a whole, I think that's how Apple presents the case.
Oh, I mean, I did see the testimony from Ms. Kerr, and I never realized that the icon that Samsung had chosen for their Photos app was a sunflower until someone said that it's a sunflower. I mean, it's a yellow flower that looks completely different from the icon that's on the iPhoto. Yes, it's an arbitrary decision, but if you're really getting down to that, not talking about the original music icon that was pretty much a perfectly blatant swipe. You know, then you're saying, are we really going to argue that you're not allowed to use a three-quarter view of a yellow flower because we used a pulled-back version of a centered sunflower?
That really doesn't look the same. I got
to
tell you.
But again, there's no reason to use that icon. And
there's no reason not to. I mean, if I wish that I'm sorry, I'm about to talk out of my depth here. One of the problems of all of us trying to follow this is that we're not there in the courtroom. We're not seeing the entire story that's being told by both sides.
Right.
And so it's very, very easy. I'm trying not to fall victim to this of my own, you know, again, reacting to bits and pieces.
Disclaimer, we are in the courtroom. We're not the jury. We're not going to make the decision. But we can have an opinion about it uninformed as we choose to be. And you sounds like you're more informed than most, Andy. You've actually read the documents.
Well, I think I can pull this up pretty quickly. I'm preparing like something I'm writing. I'm looking at different quotes. I'm actually reading. I actually find myself reading about authentication of old masters. About when a new Leonardo da Vinci sketch turns up, and now there's an argument whether it exists or not. There is a quote that I pulled up. I just pulled it up from my notes. It says, Professor Martin Kemp provides a telling summary and epilogue to the slew of evidence presented in this section, provides a unique moment of realization for art historical discourse. This is a quote from a Professor Martin Kemp talking about a recently discovered Leonardo da Vinci. No single piece of evidence proves conclusively that the portrait of the woman in profile in colored chalks was executed by Leonardo da Vinci in the mid-1490s, but the city is Bianca Sforza. The now secure position of the portrait of Mona Lisa in Leonardo's body of autographed paintings depends on, and this is the money quote, an accumulation of interlocking reasons and, not least, on the way that the painting participates in how we actively see Leonardo as a whole. And I think that kind of struck me because that's what it's going to come down to. It's going to be the entire body of interlocking evidence, and also how does this thing that Samsung create participate in how we perceive Samsung? How does this thing that Apple built participate in how we foresee Apple as an entity? So this is why I watched more Olympics than I would care to document, but the same sort of obsessive, like, oh, I got to see this event, oh, I got to see this piece of evidence, is kind of hitting the same thing with this trial.
Renee has a great your Sunday editorial at iMore.com. Everybody should read, where you compare. You say Samsung has a long and storied history of this kind of copying. You mentioned the Blackjack, which was a copy of the BlackBerry. You show some real similarities here. But I think your point, which you just made, which is that Samsung has an opportunity here to innovate a little bit more.
I think they'll take it too. I mean, we saw that with the Galaxy S3, is that they're starting to kind of feel their strength and feel their market position. Yeah. And I think they'll they'll separate themselves rapidly from now that their, I mean, their brand is so strong. One of the people who writes for us, Crackberry Kevin from crackberry.com, said that, you know, he has an HTC One X, which I actually prefer to the Galaxy S3, and everyone calls it a Galaxy S3 because Samsung's brand is so strong now. And I think they're going to leverage that to make phones that are, I mean, they're not going to need anything from Apple at all anytime soon.
I do like the One X a lot, although I carry the S3. All right, the straw poll, give you a chance. You're the jury. You've heard the evidence in fragmentary form. Go to straw poll. .me/2310 and we will check in and see what the unofficial jury says. But we still have more trial, at least another week, for Samsung to mount its defense. So I'm sure we'll hear lots more interesting stuff. Meanwhile, let's talk a little bit about Squarespace.com. I don't think I make this clear. I'm going to make this clear. Squarespace is web hosting plus software. So I think sometimes we talk so much about all that great content management stuff and how easy it is to design sites and everything. This is the hosting too. So you really, it's everything you need. People will say to me, I want a website. What do I do? It's really simple. You go to squarespace.com. If you buy an annual plan, you can get a custom domain name. They'll set it up. They'll register it for you. They'll build that in. You've got these great templates so you can design a site that's completely unique. You get the best hosting ever. We've never yet been able to bring down a Squarespace site, and I think that's pretty special. And now the new Squarespace is putting the best new content management system on this fantastic hosting platform to give you something incredible. Look at the template. You know what? If you go to squarespace.com, you could try it free for 2 weeks. Look at the templates. These are what we call responsive design. That means they adapt to the device that they're on, whether it's a 27-inch iMac or an iPhone or an iPad. Every time you put an image into your site, it automatically resizes it into all the different forms that you need so that you will work great on any device. Of course, the text resizes. In fact, it's beautiful fonts, 300-plus Google fonts. These are these web fonts that Google does that, a Squarespace site will look great even on a Retina display. It's automatically retinized, so to speak. I'm a big fan. And I have to tell you, the price is right, too. When you go to squarespace.com, take a look at the site pricing, because they've simplified it considerably to make it very easy to get a site. So go there, get started, press the Get Started button, try it free for 2 weeks. You don't need a promo code or anything. You don't even need a credit card. And then when you decide to buy, take a look at their plans. Now, they have monthly plans, but the best deal is the annual plan. $8 a month for the basic site. Look at the $16 a month site. I don't know how they do this. This is their most popular site, and for good reason. You get unlimited pages, unlimited galleries, great for photographers, artists, unlimited blogs. That means you can have multiple blogs by multiple authors, unlimited bandwidth. I don't know of any hosting company that offers this, not at this price. Unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. That means you can do anything you want. You get the custom domain, $16 a month. And if you use our offer code MacBreak8, you'll get 10% off your first purchase. MacBreak8 gives you 10% off your first purchase. If it's this plan, that's a considerable savings. I think you're going to like it. Squarespace.com, certainly. If you are looking to set up a website, your first or a new one or a one-off for a special occasion, please do yourself a favor. At least try it. Squarespace.com. Easy to get started to get a sense of what it can do. And the new Squarespace is so beautiful. Rewritten from scratch. 50-plus new or improved features. Lots of great new templates. Adaptive design. All of that. HTML5, of course. CSS3, of course. You can even use JavaScript and all of that. Squarespace.com. All right, let's take a look at our straw poll. The votes are in, 660 total votes. And you know, it's closer than I thought it would be. 51% yes, Samsung stole from Apple. And I understand it's an imperfect poll because we didn't give you all the possible choices. But my question was, if you were on the jury, would you give Apple the win and the full amount Apple's asking, $2.5 billion? 51% said yes. 38% said no. 11% were asleep. Actually, if you add the asleep people, the people who said no, it's pretty close.
Is that one of those Adenol sort of things where they're asleep, but they're not aware they're participating in a poll?
I've been on a jury. The biggest challenge is staying awake. In fact, some of the judges don't even do a very good job. It is, you know, after lunch, 2 p.m, droning on and on and on. It's not an easy thing. And, kudos to the jurors in this trial. It's not a huge, super long trial, but it's challenging. They've heard some interesting stuff, too.
Can you imagine any of the three of us being, like, called for jury duty on that day? And, you know, you'll want to answer the questions, like, when they're interviewing you correctly. But, oh, man, I really want to be on this jury. What answer do I give that will not get me thrown off?
Yeah, do you say that you use an Apple or not? Do you say what phone you use?
How do you find someone who doesn't use Apple at some point? It's almost impossible.
I don't think that they probably try. You know, the one jury I was on, which is exactly a year ago, I was surprised at the jury selection process. It was nothing like I thought it would be. First of all, they thought, as the minute I said I'm a journalist, and they said, by the way, and there was a tech angle to this this trial. They said, will we be hearing about this after the trial on your show? And I said, yeah. And it still didn't get me off. I wasn't trying to get off, but I was surprised that wasn't an issue for them. The law is a mysterious mistress.
It was between you and another juror who had shoes on his hands.
Well, there were
the
some
attorney said, okay, let's go with the
there were some people. I'm sitting there going, please don't pick him. I don't want to sit on a jury with him. Please, please, please. Okay. I did not want to prejudice our kangaroo court by playing this video. We've played it on every other show. You know what I'm talking about because, in fact, I'm going to steal it from iMore's site after the 30-second ad, which will be over in just a little bit.
This is amazing. Isn't it amazing it's mainstream, though, Leo? I think that's the biggest news to me is that this has actually hit mainstream.
This is Conan
society.
O'Brien. I don't know if Conan O'Brien counts as mainstream, but I think his audience is pretty techie. No?
It's a younger audience than anybody.
It's television.
Yeah, television is more mainstream than us. So here you go. Conan O'Brien on his show last week talking about, yes, the Apple-Samsung lawsuit. And it's good if you could see the video, but those of you listening at home, I think you'll understand what's going on.
Apple is claiming that Samsung copied iPhone technology to market its own products. Well, Samsung's vice president of electronics has already released a video that's defending his company. It's a video message defending Samsung. Let's take a look.
Hello. Apple's claim that Samsung has copied their technology is an allegation we're vigorously denying. Since we entered the personal electronics space, Samsung has created products that, as you can see, bear no similarity to Apple's. Notice the grayer edge of our Galaxy phone. And what about our Galaxy tablet? Not even close. It's not just electronics. Samsung's originality is also on display in our home appliances.
I should point out now that he has changed his outfit to a black turtleneck, black jeans, just to give him a unique look.
Samsung's originality is also on display in our home appliances, whether it's our new microwave oven, our Vac Pro vacuum cleaner, or eye washer with scroll wheel control. Don't believe me? Then come to our retail stores, where you can talk more about our products with a Samsung smart guy. And you know, a lot of people ask, how does Samsung stay so original, so innovative? It's very simple, really. We stay true to the vision of Samsung founder Stefan Jobs.
So you're right. I mean, I guess that's the moral of this, Renee, is that it is mainstream. Everybody's aware of this.
Yeah, there was some pushback saying that they're showing off the app tray for Android and not the actual home screen.
No, those
are the
humor.
Images that were marketed for those devices.
This is comedy. Come on. Yeah. This is comedy.
But it does illustrate the stakes for both companies. I mean, if Samsung, apart from the actual court case, there's like public opinion, and that Samsung could walk away from this with a public opinion that they don't do anything interesting that Apple hasn't done 2 years earlier. If you want the interesting thing, go Apple, you'll get it earlier. Apple is at risk of saying, no, they're not. The reason why their products are better are only because they will sue anybody who does anything that is even remotely okay. Any phone that doesn't have a dialing dial on it is going to be sued by Apple. So
it's a huge risk.
High stakes
companies.
On both. Yeah.
The great Andy Hertzfeld, who created the Macintosh, posted on his He's been posting. In fact, if you're not following him on Google Plus, you should, because he's been posting some really interesting stuff on his Google Plus, including a commercial that Shiat Day made for Apple in 1983 that never aired because Apple said it was, and I think he means by Apple, Steve Jobs, that it was too self-congratulatory.
And that's not something we associate with
Apple. Here's a little bit of that video. This is from Andy Hertzfeld's blog.
Or yeah, we G-plus, designed Macintosh really because we wanted one for ourselves, and we could.
Let me go full screen on this so we can see the.
Yeah, we designed Macintosh really because we wanted one for ourselves, and we couldn't get one. And Apple turned it into a product.
That's
to
Burl
turn
Smith.
The whole world onto what we've got.
God, I think really so young.
Mac is a big extension of who we think we are and where we think we're going, and that's why we designed the product.
And so we set out to capture the greatness of Lisa in something affordable to individuals rather than corporations.
It had to be easy to manufacture.
George Crow.
It had to be very reliable because we didn't want our customers to ever have to worry about it failing. And it had to cost roughly one quarter as much as anything I'd ever designed before.
Demonstrating a Macintosh is the only way to do it. You've got to show somebody. I can't really describe it to you in words, but if I can get you to sit in front of it and play with it, you won't let go of it.
And I think what you're going to see is that the balance of power is going to shift.
It's Mike Murray.
The balance of power from companies running people to hopefully people running companies.
We were just trying to make something incredibly great. And I think we did.
I love that smile.
He looks like every guy who ever put a quarter next to mine on every arcade version of Dragon's Lair I ever played.
I love that. That was recorded in October 83, of course, 4 or 5 months before... Macintosh was released. I guess that's not the commercial, but the snippets that they were planning on using in a commercial and decided not to.
Now, is that like the 1984 commercial? Did we also not see the completed product in that
Never
video?
Never did.
Either?
Just a motherboard. It's the only part that we ever saw. Really, really neat. Really, really neat. And do take a look at Andy's... Andy Hertzfeld's, not Andy Anacos. He's got a great Google Plus too, but I'm talking about Andy Hertzfeld's Google Plus. He's at Google now, so he's actually very active on Google Plus. And apparently, one last story before we get to your tip of the week, Apple may be giving us new iMacs and Mac Pros. I got an email from somebody, or actually it was a tweet, saying, why don't you ever talk about the Mac? And I said, don't blame me, blame Apple. If Apple says something, we'll do it.
You talked about the Retina Mac. You gave it their moment.
I love the Retina Mac.
There you go.
By the way, Otherworld Computing now has announced solid-state upgrades for that potentially unrepairable MacBook Retina. So if you're brave enough,
screws on.
Yeah, if you're brave enough to open open it, you can put... And, you know, it's just a little... I did it on my MacBook Air. It was an easy thing to do.
I have not used my MacBook Air or my last year MacBook Pro since I got the Retina one. It just completely replaced both of them.
It's replaced my Pro.
Yeah.
It's all I use. Internal configuration. This is from Apple Insider, Daniel Aaron Dilger. Internal configuration files in Mountain Lion make apparent references to as yet unreleased new generations of iMac, the iMac 13.0, and Mac Pro, Mac Pro 6.0, both in the context of USB booting options that I think Daniel perhaps reasonably concludes means there will be no optical drive in these new devices for the first time in 20 years.
Mm. They got floppied.
They got floppied.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a rumor, so I'm not going to react to a rumor. But I think that would be a highly interesting move for Apple to make, to delete an optical drive from a humongous already
a desktop that has room.
It makes sense for the Mac Mini because you want that to be as tiny as possible. Also, you don't want another opening to get gathered dust, given that so many people use these for servers. Makes a hell of a lot of sense. Obvious sense for the MacBook Airs. I thought for an iMac for a desktop where you have to tell me. Why did you delete this?
Well, but remember the first time iMac, they deleted the floppy. And they there was room. Mm.
But they had I don't want to, it's a rumor.
It makes it lighter for you to carry your whole iMac to Starbucks, Andy.
Yeah.
Again,
my central thing is always, that's fine. I'm not, it's not as though like my Italian forebears have been hand manufacturing optical dries for generation after generation. you're killing a noble tradition, Apple. It's just that as a consumer, it's like, if you're getting $1,500 for me and you're making me go back to a store to buy something for $100 for this thing that, yes, I will probably be, not every day, but certainly a few times a year at least, you have to explain to me what the win is for me, right, that you're deleting this component.
No,
that's a general thing for me.
Not that I ever use a SuperDrive in my Mac Pro.
Never. New model numbers usually mean there's new processors, and my guess would be that they would use whatever the latest Intel kit is.
Well, yeah. There's a couple of things that we need the Mac Pro. We need an update. We've got to put Thunderbolt in there.
Yeah.
Frankly, Ivy Bridge wouldn't be so bad. There's the new Xeon is not there.
No.
It's time. But apparently, according to Tim Cook, we won't see anything till next year. So that's why I'm using the MacBook Retina. In fact, I'm real close to buying a Thunderbolt display, 27-inch display, and just making it my desktop.
I just did that. I bought the Thunderbolt display, hooked it up, and it's a fantastic combination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's faster than your Mac Pro.
It really is. I mean, it's a beast.
Yeah,
that's why I think that we should be really, really keen to see what Apple decides to do with their desktop machines, because they could really delete both the iMac and the desktop Mac and the Mac Pro and simply say, look, our machines, our notebooks are so good that we would much rather sell you an $800 external screen accessory that lets you keep everything together rather than give you another power supply, another thing that sucks juice down, another thing that you have to make room for in your office. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Not the external screen would not have a power supply, but
I think they would
be the first to say, why are we selling? Why don't we just tell you that our laptops are good enough that you can use them as a desktop and produce a product that makes it elegant to use an external display?
Well, there was a great comment from Sean Blanc who said that iPads are the new laptop and MacBooks are the new desktop.
Yeah. It's just squishing it down.
Yeah. Mm.
We're going to take a break and get our tips, picks, and all of that stuff. But first, let's start with an Audible pick of the week. Audible.com, the audio bookstore I love so very much. I've been a member since the year 2000 at Audible.com. 500-plus books in my library, and I love that because I just, I put the Audible app on my iPhone or my Android phone or even my Windows phone, and then I can look at any book that I've ever purchased on Audible.com and say, oh, gosh, I haven't read A Tale of Two Cities in 5 years. It's time to read it again. It feels like that's the way to do it, really. Here's the deal. Go to audible.com/MacBreak right now and pick a book. Your first book is free. You'll be signing up for the gold account. That's a book a month, and your first month's free. Your first book is free, and you can cancel at any time, pay nothing, but the book is yours forever and ever. audible.com/MacBreak. And I'm just curious, Andy, if you have been reading something, your summer reading list.
This is something that I just picked out yesterday because Phil Rosenthal is the co-creator of Everybody Loves Raymond. And so he has a book called You're Lucky, You're Funny, How Life Becomes a Sitcom, which you probably passed by because, oh, good, a hit show is now closing after 10 years. And now we're going to see, accumulated life wisdom about what after I created a family sitcom. Like, okay, boring. But Phil Rosenthal was on Kevin Pollak's chat show last week, and he is one hell of a funny storyteller who's had an incredible amount of adventures. And also, he talks like this.
Hello.
He has a wonderful delivery.
I'm Phil Rosenthal.
Like a younger version of Five-ish Finger. And he knows where the punchline is. He knows where the punchline is and how to tell it. So when you're talking about a person who has been working in the television industry, who wrote, you remember that video where Bill Clinton, the final years at the Gridiron Dinner,
yes,
he's the one who wrote it, he's the one who shot it, and he has a story about how that came to
with
be.
Kevin Spacey stealing, and Kevin Bill Spacey. Clinton steals his Oscar.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
And so at minimum track. So I think that you will definitely get this audiobook if you go to the Kevin Pollak's Chat Show page and download that episode. 10 minutes in, you're like, audible.com. I can get 6 or 7 hours of this. Excellent.
It's such a great. I'll play a little. I don't know if you got. Do you have my audio? Let me play a little bit. I want to hear Phil's voice.
Sorts. That's right, Oprah. And I'll swear it's all true, even if you make the mean face at me on the couch. We'll also, if you're interested, get into how to make a show, specifically the show Everybody Loves Raymond.
You're absolutely right. He does.
Like, so sometimes you buy a book at least 60%.
Oh yeah.
I would enjoy having this guy in my car for 7 hours.
This is my next book. I love it. I'm going to put it right. You see, you have this nice thing on the Audible today. It's called the wish list. I've used my 2 credits for the month, but here you go. You go to the wish list, and you just add that to your wish list. And then, well, I forgot to do that, though. You add that to your wish list. And then the next time I get some credits, I'm just going to go over there, and I'll say, hey, I'll get Phil. Phil's good. He's nice. He's funny. Audible, here's the deal. Audible.com/MacBreak. You're going to get a credit for a book. Most books are credit. There are a few that are not. I apologize in advance. This book is 1 credit, free, yours to keep. Audible.com. Andy's recommendation, Phil Rosenthal, You're Lucky, You're Funny, How Life Becomes a Sitcom. And now it's time for a pick from Mr. Rene Ritchie of iMore.com.
It's not a brand new app. I mean, there's a couple of new apps that aren't out yet that I would love to talk about, but this one is, it's been around for a while. And especially since I've got the Retina MacBook and I have things strewn all over other computers that I'm not using right now, it's Adovia's Screens by Luc Vandal. And it's a VNC app, but it's a VNC app that's really iOS and Mac looking, feeling, working. It's incredibly fast. It lets you connect from your iPhone or your iPad or another Mac. It's almost like back to your Mac if Apple bothered to make it for iOS devices as well.
They would.
And it syncs over iCloud. Yes. And it syncs over iCloud. And I've been using it, I think, over a year. I use it constantly, and I've had nothing but good experiences with it. So I highly recommend it.
You can go to screensapp.com or EDOVIA.com, screens. And so you need the Mac version and the iOS version. Is that right?
If you want to use it, yeah. The iOS is a universal app, so it'll work on both iPad and iPhone. If you want the Mac version too, it's a separate Mac Store app. And he's actually in the Mac App Store. He's sandboxed. He's doing everything that Apple says you should do for next generation Mac apps.
Hard to believe. Yeah. So I'm not sure I understand. Do I need, if I want to use screens on my iPad to access my desktop, do I need it on my desktop as well? Or
no.
No.
As a matter of fact, he has this really good free tool called Screens Connect. Because you know how like Back to My Mac is supposed to work but doesn't, depending on whether the coffee shop has the wrong kind of router, doesn't have the right feature enabled?
Right.
Screens Connect is essentially like a dynamic DNS system so that the machine you want to connect to will always be telling server that, oh, here's how to find me, here's how to get through to me. And it just works incredibly reliably. I double this pick because I've been using Screens Connect at least several times a week on my iPad, and this is how I fill in the gap between not having a certain Mac app on my iPad and using it as my main going around computer.
I actually use Back to My Mac all the time because it's my home router is set up properly and all that, but it would be nice to have that, you know, kind of reliably.
I have a friend who's a network admin, and his dream has always been to sit by the pool, sip a pina colada, and run his server room from an iPad. And he actually uses screens and does just that. Good, and that to me is just like the best recommendation.
Awesome.
Not only that, but it's the coolest thing ever. Like when I'm doing like an installation that's going to take like, or download's going to take 45 minutes to an hour, and you want to know when it's done so you can go down and like the backup's over, so now I can actually start working on this thing. I'll have screens on my iPhone and just occasionally take it out of my pocket just to look at the status bar of that Mac to say, okay, I should mm-hmm. I finish this drink right now, get in the car and go home because it looks like it's going to be done in about 10 minutes.
Very nice.
And I've used it in bars on my iPhone to do just that, to look at my computer at home over 3G. And he's also working on Screens 3. I think it's still a little ways away, but this is not one of those apps that's going to fall by the wayside. He's very good about pushing it forward.
Cool. Good recommendation. Thank you, Renee. Andy Anako. I don't know. Did you prepare a lion tip? Do you want to do that first and then a recommendation?
I have a lion tip. If you need to get right to the pick, I can go to the pick. But
Go to the pick.
Go to the pick. Okay.
We'll save the lion for next week.
Well, always good to have a tip for next week. This is a very simple device I've been looking for quite a while. It's from Belkin. It's the Belkin Car Audio Connect AUX. Awful product name. But what it is it's for people like me who All I want, I'm not an audiophile. I'm also not a car guy. So I'm not willing to spend $200 to have a Bluetooth audio deck put into my car just so I can connect to it wirelessly. So this is the nicest Bluetooth kit I've seen. On this end, it's just your basic, you know, cigarette lighter connector with built-in USB power. You got this plug jack that plugs into whatever audio in you have on your existing car deck. And then this is simply a Bluetooth transceiver that magnetically sticks onto your dashboard. So if you want to hide this or take it out of your car, like I've just done, you can just simply yank it out without any harm done. And so when you get into your car, you just simply tap this button. It turns on the Bluetooth. Your phone automatically connects to it. And now you've got Bluetooth audio. Oh, I'm sorry. This is you got Bluetooth audio and you've got the audio feed going. It's also a Bluetooth microphone, hands-free. So anytime you want to answer a call, you can simply reach to the dashboard, touch this button again, and you'll be using this as a Bluetooth microphone with the audio going through your car stereo. So again, for someone who didn't want to, it's an old car. I'm probably going to be buying a new one in a year or two anyway. So who, you know, it's not worth taking my dash apart to put in a new stereo. But this gives me like the Bluetooth audio that I've really, really wanted, and you can get it for less than $50. Works great.
On Belkin, it's $80, but Amazon and others probably have better deals. Yeah,
yeah, yes. I've used it too. It's fantastic.
So yes. this does it use A2DP to connect?
Yeah.
Okay,
right. Any like Bluetooth 3, even Bluetooth 3 profile work just fine with it. So it acts not only as a stereo transponder, but also will act as a hands-free device. Your phone will identify it and use it as both of those things.
But you do need a aux into your car stereo.
Yeah, this is the end that plugs into whatever you've got inside your car. So if you don't have one of those yet, you're going to have to get one of those. But if you've got like an ancient beater car with just a cassette deck, you can have the cassette adapter, use a gender changer to plug this in. Fortunately, my car is not so old that I don't have a way to put like aux input to it. It just didn't have Bluetooth, and I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, it's kind of that's at the middle range.
It was like, do I want Bluetooth in my car, or do I want the brakes to work again? Maybe I should get the brakes fixed.
The really great thing, too, is if you have friends, family, significant others who happen not to use Apple gear, Bluetooth is absolutely platform agnostic. Right, so anyone can jump in and hook up their phone or tablet and just use it.
Yeah, and and especially when you're traveling, like if you just want to be able to connect to the stereo system that's inside your if you're traveling, you want to connect the stereo inside your rental car. This is small enough that it's worth packing, so that maybe if you rent a car that has a headphone jack input, this will work with it just fine.
$50.99 on Amazon.com. Thank you, Mr. Andy Inako, Chicago Sun-Times, www.cwob.com. We will see you again next week.
See you next month.
Thanks. Next month. Oh, yeah. Contact our bursar for reimbursement. Our comptroller will be in touch.
Does Greyhound go all the way from New England to San Francisco?
I can buy you a one-way Greyhound ticket right here.
Yeah, it only matters to Mac Break that you're here for the show. After that, you kind of
how you get home is your problem.
You're literally meeting me halfway.
Literally. Thank you to Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. A great pleasure always to have you on. Anything you want to plug, your podcast, anything?
No, I mean, you can find me at iMore.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at Renee Ritchie. And thank you again for having me, Leo. It's always a blast.
We love having you on. And you've been doing such great work at iMore.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. That would be 2 p.m. Eastern time. And then 11 is plus 7 is 1800 UTC on twit.tv. We can't, you know, by the way, live.twit.tv also works, and we keep that alive for all of you who need that particular kind of interface. We also recommend, though, and there's some really good apps for iOS. Craig Mullaney at Shift Key Software has done an app for iPhone and iPad, and he just updated it. It's really great. So a good way to watch if you're using an iOS device is the Twit app from Shift Key Software. We highly recommend that as well. And we appreciate having you here live. It's great to see you in the chat room and all of that. But if you can't, we always have audio and video available after the fact on demand at twit.tv. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned. The Gizwiz is up in about a minute, just a bit. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work, because break time is over.